We're having old and young talks in here before the show.
Great start to the morning.
Trying to ask the fellas, like, what exactly is the... I don't understand how, like, Pete apparently... What's your TikTok? People can go follow you.
I'm not really sure what it is, to be honest.
Way to go, Pete. I think it's... Way to blow it. Yeah, you just don't know how to promote your own thing.
I assume it's Peace and Love Sports, yeah. I assume. But this was the SM Bets TikTok, so
anyway,
it was good for my work.
Pete did over 1 million views on TikTok this weekend.
Yeah, no big deal.
Yeah, give me 5.
Yeah. Thanks, Pete. JD.
Attaboy. Yeah. Attaboy. Yeah. So... He does over 1 million for doing a curling video. You're into curling now, which will come up at some
curler.
Point.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Curling is awesome.
Huge.
It's so fun. Mm-hmm. It's so fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to get a group to commit at sometimes the price of some places. The place that I wanted to go to, they had a pretty hardcore membership fee. And I went, that's prohibitive of trying to get a group of beginners. That's the thing, right? If you play... then who cares? You're down for whatever. But to get the brakes beaten off you every week at curling for a membership fee, I couldn't get everybody down for it. Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, you get older, busier, and all that different stuff.
I've never actually tried it.
I've never tried curling
so like on like a rink.
A lot of fun. Joe.
I've tried like fake curling.
I'm gonna do it again
with
my family over the holidays. We'll do a bunch, Bill.
Maybe we also do a little JDP curling night.
Maybe we will, Pete. You got really excited about that. Anyways,
you still smile there.
I know. I'm not going to let Pete down. But I don't understand how, because every person that has TikTok, they love putting on their Instagram, like, I have 100,000 followers on TikTok. And you go, I haven't seen one interesting tweet from you ever in your life. And all your Instagram posts are just, you know, mirror selfies. And yet somehow you've parlayed this. I don't understand how it works. And I never will, because I'm never getting on TikTok. It's just never going to happen for me. Even though I love reels just like the rest of you. And there's nothing more frustrating than sending my friends reels only to say, this was on TikTok like a week ago, man. And I go... I hope you die in a fire.
I hate those people. The people who tell you that they saw like a meme before you did. It's just, like, sick, dude.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
Congrats.
Hit it with the heart.
Yeah.
Just hit it with the heart.
Yeah.
That's if it's new to you and engaging, engage. Be like, this is really funny. This is reminds of this. This is great. Oh my God, this is my favorite part of this. The heart is the genuine sign, the nice sign for I've seen this already. But I acknowledge and I enjoy. Thank you for your time. Thank you for considering and thinking about me.
Yeah.
But TikTok has really made us olds feel old. It has been tough sledding for the people who will refuse to get on the platform. But it's too addicting. Everybody I know tells me that all they do is spend their time on TikTok. And I already have enough problem with devices and phones and instant gratification. So I don't need to open that door either.
Mm-hmm. I deleted it.
The algorithm works really well, and it will randomly, like, it will show me stuff, and I'm like, oh, geez, is that what my algorithm is? You know, it's
Are you those guys curling with kegs? Is that why you did a million?
Yeah. That was me. Do you see that?
That was actually you?
Yeah, that was me. Yeah, that was my video.
No, it wasn't.
You saw my video?
Was it really that one?
Yeah. This is news.
Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah.
How did they let you throw the kegs on the ice?
Well, it was part of this intermediate curling event, like trying to get newcomers into curling that my friend's mom hosted. And that was like a final challenge to win a 2-4 beer. Yeah.
Did you win?
Yeah, I won.
Yeah. Attaboy. Nice. What kind of beer?
Stella. Yeah.
All right. Fancy.
Because the event was sponsored by Labatt's. Yeah. But the shot that's shown in the reel or on the TikTok.
I didn't see you in there, though.
Oh, that was me with the hat. Yeah, with the sweatpants and everything.
Dude, Pete, you've been off the show too long. I saw a full video of you in it and didn't even know that was you.
Yeah.
And can I be honest with you? Yeah. When I saw that, I went, look at these idiots maybe ruining the ice.
Oh,
yeah, but
JD.
I guess it's on trash ice and that this
is a promotion. Well, we put the sliders underneath the keg.
Yeah, you were considerate.
Like that you put on your feet.
Yeah,
on the one leg.
All right, good lad. Anyways, good job by you, Pete.
Yeah, thanks, JD.
I'm really proud of you.
That's
all right,
awesome.
Million on TikTok. Let's go, man.
Nice.
Let's go. If you remembered his TikTok, you could follow him for more of his reckless keg TikToks. All right, way to go. So, in less positive news, tough weekend for the Raptors. Great weekend for the Leafs, tough weekend for the Raptors. I'm going to quickly do these two things. I'm going to bring on Arden Zwelling, and he and I are going to talk a little bit about the UFC's weekend, credibility, and, what Kevin Kiermaier is here to do, because that's not exactly clear to me. Can I be honest? This is bad show prep by me and admitting this on air. I waited for a long time to see what the terms were, and I never actually saw them. Like, I'm still in the dark as to what contract Kevin Kiermaier has signed. I just knew he agreed to terms with the Blue Jays. And then it was 3-year deal? All right. How much? The number's not out? Secret number, eh?
Yeah, okay. Secret number.
Yeah, all right. That's weird.
As of a day ago, there's still nothing.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I never saw, so we now know the term. Great. Anyway, Arden and I will talk about that. But quick couple thoughts on Leafs and Raptors that'll be expanded over the coming week. The Raptors losing two games in a row to Orlando might end up not being so bad. There's some buzz about this team now and what some sells could look like. I think there are times where we can get really positive about this team, and I've been really positive about this team. And even at the beginning of the season, when you first saw Pascal Siakam, you went, holy crap, what could these guys be if Scotty Barnes takes a step? Scotty Barnes hasn't taken a step. He's taken a step back to the tune of they're asking about it, and he's going, I'm having fun. And you go, okay, all right. Seems like it really sucks when you play poorly all the time and you have a team that's losing and you're playing guys like Paolo Banchero, who, like, you're supposed to be compared to that guy? No, not right now. No one's writing off Scotty Barnes' career. No one's wondering about how his development's going to be moving forward. Obviously, like, sophomore slumps are pretty common in professional sports. And you need to look no further than to the soon-to-be reigning champion Boston Celtics to realize that young players have growing pains and that this league usually is one where between 25 and 29 is your primey prime. Mm-hmm. There's a long road for Scotty Barnes, who, don't forget, when he was drafted, it was, hey, this guy's going to be a project.
Yeah.
Everything he did was blowing everybody's expectations out of the water. Then expectations get too high. He struggles, and you have what we have right now. But the rest of the team, boy, it's weird to see Raptors Twitter hot about the team. Because normally, since the championship, this has just been basically a fan base that goes, we're happy with everything.
Yeah, outside of the Tampa Bay year.
There's no criticism. But even that year, people were happy with the tank for the most part. There were some weird anti-tank people that season, even though it was like, they're not playing here and they suck.
Yeah, no.
What are we doing?
They got a fourth overall pick.
Yeah, they did get Scotty Barnes, but I still vividly recall people taking this staunch position against not wanting the Raptors to be bad, which always confused me. Anyway, here we are today, and they're a upper middle class team. Mm-hmm. They can hang with the big boys. They can lose to the crappy teams. For the most part, they're going to give you a pretty decent defensive effort, turned into foul trouble for them in that last game. But here's what they definitely don't have. Any pieces around their best four or five guys. They've been able to hit on nothing. People are crying about Malachi Flynn not playing in ball games. I get it. I'd like to see Malachi Flynn play a little bit more, too. I wish he would have maybe had a bit of a different developmental track.
Yep.
But do we really believe that Malachi Flynn is what's turning this team to a contender? Do you really believe that if they played Malachi Flynn more, maybe there's a little bit of a case that Fred wouldn't be wearing down the way that he is throughout his career. But Fred VanVleet's an injury-prone, undersized guard.
Yep.
Like, this is what happens to those guys sometimes. When they go through shooting slumps, it looks really rough. It's tough to watch. But they've hit on nothing outside of these dudes. The Thad Young trade, he's had some nice moments. He's an okay veteran. But last night we're watching Kem Birch play minutes again. We're watching Christian Coloco, a second-round pick, play center. He only played, I think, 8 minutes or 6 or 8 minutes. But you know why? Because that's the entire amount of time he can stay on the floor against the Orlando Magic. They've built no depth around these guys. And it's too difficult to envision building depth around this exact group on the fly in a quick way, developing in a quick way, especially when you do have a head coach that loves to win and is not a developmental head coach. So I've talked about this, but the Raptors are at a crossroads. This is the segment I did with Blake last week. They are eventually going to have to decide what direction they are going in. Last year, that's what it was supposed to be about. I talked to Bobby Webster when I was hosting the morning show. And you know what the line of questioning was all about? What is the timeline? What track are you on? Are you a developing team? Are you a half-rebuilding team that's trying to go young? Or are you a team that wants to contend and build around your older players in Fred and Siakam? Because there are guys that are too far apart in age and too far apart in development. And then Scotty was so good that it tripped everybody up. Scotty came out gangbusters.
Yeah.
Incredible defense. Could get to the rim. Showed just promise. Remember the Philadelphia series before he got hurt? Mm-hmm. And where game one, he looked like the Raptors' best player. All of a sudden, there was talk about combining the timelines. Maybe the Raptors are on a different kind of track. Maybe they are doing things differently. Maybe the whole having a million 6 foot nine guys is going to work in a league where everybody wants wing players. They can just attack you defensively, make it so impossible for you to score on them, and then find different ways to score around Siakam, who is growing, and Scottie Barnes. These two big 6 foot nine guys who could slash, get to the rim, create, maybe shoot a little bit, surround them with some guys that can hit shots like OG, Fred, Gary Trent. Maybe Precious is something a little bit more. This could hit. There's time left in this season for them to turn it around. But at this point, it's starting to feel like the more intelligent course of action is to commit to one of those timelines. They're not trading Scottie Barnes. So that tells you what timeline they're committing to.
Yeah.
They need to commit to the Barnes timeline. If you really believe Barnes is a star, then you got to figure out who's leaving. And I've said it, and I'll continue to say it. Fred VanVleet was an awesome player for this franchise. He continues to be a great leader for this franchise. He represents a lot of what Raptors fans want this organization to be. He is of crucial importance to their success because they don't have another player like him. But out of all the players, he might have to be the guy that moves. He has a deal where he can walk at the end of the season. And the Raptors are going to be what? Forced to make this difficult decision of bring the whole gang back? That's becoming more and more clear. That's not an option. Trying to build through second round picks and firsts around these guys and mid-level exceptions where you can get an Otto Porter Jr. who plays no games for you doesn't really seem like a great path forward. So pick a timeline. And if you're going to say that Scottie Barnes is untouchable, then it sounds like you've already picked the timeline. And now we're kind of just playing out the string here. The really curious thing is, if they do pick the timeline, what's that going to mean for Nick Nurse? Because he's not exactly Mr. Development. He's Mr. Win Now. He's a hard guy to be around. He clashes with players. He's demanding. He's impatient. Sometimes that's worked where, remember the Terrence Davis thing? He sat him, and then he came back the next night, and he scored a million points, and he has a magic touch. I don't know. There are just really big questions that are starting to build for the Raptors. And for the first time since, the championship season, after winning the championship, there seem to be expectations back with Raptors fans. People kind of want to know what the hell is going on with this organization. I don't think it's as bad as some people are making out to be. Mm-hmm. I do think that there are some regression stuff that's going to happen with the group. But ultimately, the question that was there 2 years ago about the timelines is emerging to be a really, really big question right now. Anyways, we'll talk about Daryl Sutter. Before Arden comes on, I'm just going to say this. This is the entire take. It's genuinely hilarious that Daryl Sutter cried about the officials in Toronto when we know that factually it's not true. This is a year removed from the Toronto Maple Leafs showing basically every statistic possible that Austin Matthews doesn't get enough penalties and that one guy started to get them in Michael Bunting, and then he dove a bunch, so referees stopped giving him penalties. Anyway, Pete gave me this. The Leafs' 832 penalties drawn on home ice since the start of the Austin Matthews era are the fourth fewest of any team in the league on a per-60 basis. They're 31st of 32nd since 2016 and 2017 at 4 minutes and 38 seconds of power play time a night. It's hilarious. Why Daryl Sutter brought this up is he was frustrated in a moment. He was obviously pissed that his team made it to overtime, barely got there because he had back-to-back power plays, and then lost on 4-on-3, where you know what happens. You get 2 minutes 4-on-3, it's over. The game is over. He was pissed. Go back and look at those penalties. Which one of them do you want back? They were all penalties that the ref just like flat out has to call it. I actually thought that Calgary got a decent whistle. Anyway, for a guy who's all farm guy, strong, silent type, that was really weird for him to go full crybaby to the media. Anyway, there goes me ever having Daryl Sutter on this show. Arden Welling will do it, though. He's here right now at the Letters. What's up, buddy? How we doing?
Yeah, I haven't burned this bridge yet, bud.
Yeah, I know.
Not yet.
It's pretty good. I think I've come close a couple of times.
Yeah, we danced around it once or twice.
Yeah, exactly.
Hold on, man.
Yeah, no, not too bad. Anyway, so I got a bunch of bases to cover with you today. Okay, why don't we know what Kiermaier's making?
It's not finalized yet. Still got to go through a physical, so I would expect that'll come early this week.
Is it kind of weird that it's a three-year deal for a guy that's coming off of a hip injury and that has to play on turf and that still hasn't passed a physical?
You thought Brandon Nimmo got a lot of money.
Yeah.
Just wait till you see the Kiermaier terms. Yeah.
No, seriously, though, this is a weird signing because for a while we didn't know what the term was. We don't know what the money is. We don't know what his role is. Where do you think that he actually was in terms of the priority depth chart for this organization heading into free agency?
I think the really tough thing for a lot of people with this Jays offseason is it's just sort of working in reverse. Like, they're kind of doing the stuff around the edges before they do the main stuff. Like, they've kind of they're picking out, like, the handles on the kitchen cabinets before installing the cabinets themselves. So, like Kiermaier's not here to replace Teoscar Hernandez, and, like, he's not here to be a 162-game player. I think, if anything, Kiermaier just kind of condenses Raimel Tapia, Jackie Bradley Jr., and Bradley Zimmer into one roster spot, because he brings the same level of offense as Tapia did in the left-handed look in the lineup. He brings Bradley's defense, better defense, honestly, and he brings Zimmer's speed. So he does all those things in one roster spot and opens up two others that the Blue Jays can now use to go and acquire some more impactful offensive contributors that can help replace some of what Teoscar Hernandez took to Seattle.
See, that's good to hear, because there is a that when you put it that way, it's combining all the depth guys and a lot of their best traits. That's a great sell. That's a great piece to have on the roster. The fear is people looked at it and went, are we sure he's going to play that few games? How many games is this guy going to play? Because there's a lot of, hey, Springer might have to move into right field, and maybe he turns out to be the Teoscar Herp replacement, and what you're looking at is this is your outfield, and that they might find somebody else who's a part-time player. I like Kiermaier. I think that he is just, he's got a grit, an attitude to him. It's funny to now have to like players that the fan base has normally hated. But there's a lot to like about this guy. You just outlined a bunch of it. My bigger question is, what was the role that was promised to him? How many games is he going to play? But secondarily, what's the track? Everyone's pointing out his sprint speed, right? And how good of an outfielder is and all the defensive runs saved. But what do you think that's going to play like when there are different outfield dimensions? He is starting to age. He is coming off of a tough surgery, man. Hip is no joke. And he's playing on that Rogers Center turf.
You know, I would think Kiermaier should show better this year now that he's healed. Like, he talked about how he was carrying the hip issue for a year and a half. So this is something that was impacting him in 2021 even. And he was getting cortisone shots last spring and throughout the season just to try to play through it and get through it. So I'm sure he's going to be feeling a lot better this year. Like, you can't put enough superlatives on his defense, honestly. Like, he's like Mount Rushmore center field defender in baseball. And, like, to your point about how Jays fans are going to come around on him and like him, like, watch a month into the year when he's made three or four plays that make you go, oh my goodness, like, mere mortals don't do that stuff, and layer into that the exceptional, like, hustle and effort that will be consistent and high level always. I mean, fans are going to like the guy, but he's not here to power this offense. Like, make no mistake, if you get Raimel Tapia's offensive production from last year out of Kevin Kiermaier, that's what you like. That's it. That should be the expectation. You know, he could maybe do a bit better than Tapia, but I mean, you're looking at a high level expectation as like league average hitter. He's not going to tear up the world offensively. He is here to prevent runs in center field. He is here to impact the game with his speed. As far as the playing time, I think Tapia is another good comp, like 100 games, 400 plate appearances, something in that realm. That all of it in center field, with George Springer having shown a willingness to move to right for a superior defender last year. I mean, I think it makes sense as a complementary piece to the Blue Jays. If it's the solution to their outfield and to replacing Teoscar Hernandez, obviously that's not good enough. But it isn't. It's just part of the puzzle.
Yeah, that's why it's hard to judge right now. Right now, you just tell me in the offseason, they're going to add Kevin Kiermaier to the outfield. And again, if it's to the role that you just described, I'm saying that's amazing. If it's to more than that, I'm going, that's bad. That's really not good. So who's the other guy that you'd like to see round out this outfield then, if it's you? What do you think's ideal?
I see a few different avenues. Like, there's obviously the Brantley and Conforto options that would make a ton of sense. I like the idea maybe of getting somebody with like a bit more versatility, so you can like really use that sort of that flexibility. So, you know, if that means like an Adam Frazier or a Brian Anderson or a Jerickson Profar, like somebody who can play infield and outfield, now all of a sudden John Schneider can like fill out some really interesting lineups and really attack the weaknesses of the opposition on a given night. So like, I kind of like that idea. If you can't get one of the higher upside guys, obviously like your Dalton Varshows and your Brian Reynolds and trade make a lot of sense. And then if you really have to, you can go like pretty deep into this market and find some sort of intriguing upside plays like an Edwin Rios or, you know, an AJ Pollock, like a Joey Gallo and guys like that. But you want to start with the higher end options. So you want to start with your Confortos, your Brantleys, your Varshows, your Reynolds. Mm-hmm. And if those options get exhausted, then you can start getting more creative with, like I said, more versatile types or sort of building out more sort of more of a creative bench construction.
Yeah, I'd rather you mentioned it with the going after the handles before the cabinets. That to me is you can't do any more of those moves before you make one of consequence. I'm sorry, but there can't be one weird gadgety, I can play some mediocre infield and outfield types before they get something that makes it easier to understand what like the fits are around a player like that. The interesting one for me is, can you afford to make a trade for an outfielder now, given what you have from a prospect standpoint? Because if you're in on a guy like Brian Reynolds, well, one, then it actually makes it even a little bit stranger that you went and got a Kevin Kiermaier. But if you go out and you actually have to trade for somebody of significance, what do you have left?
Well, you're looking at the catching surplus, obviously, as an area that the Blue Jays could dip into. You know, you kind of look at your top-level prospects. You probably don't want to touch Tiedemann at this point because, like, he could be, honestly, pitching innings for the Blue Jays in 2023. Mm-hmm. And young starting pitchers who can throw like him are, you know, pretty rare from the left side. You know, you could talk about, like, a Yusfair Zulueta who's, you know, got a ton of helium, and you could sell teams on him as a starter, and obviously he throws hard. You know, you could look at Aroldis Martinez. If there's anybody who's believing the power in Double A and thinks that they can help him improve his swing decisions, I mean, the strikeout rate at Double A was pretty damning. But I mean, like, there are absolutely options for the Blue Jays to trade from. But like, as always, the trade is about lining up with the other side. Like, the Blue Jays have had so much trouble lining up with the Pirates on deals over the years because Ben Cherington, Steve Sanders, the guys over there, they value guys so similarly to how the Blue Jays do. Like, you got to find that team who like sees different things in Aroldis Martinez than you do, or sees different things in Zulueta than you do, so that you can kind of create that discrepancy and find a trade that benefits both sides. If you both feel so similarly about the principles involved, it's sort of hard to line up on a deal where both sides are saying, no, we're winning this. We want to make this deal.
Yeah, the issue I have with it is people around the game seem to be telling us that, especially after the Cardinals signing, that the Blue Jays catching options are not as attractive in the market as they once were. If they're dead set on keeping Gabriel Moreno, which it seems like that is becoming more and more clear, that Danny Jansen is the actual available guy, not the other two. And yeah, they have prospects, but you said it. They don't want to remove Ricky Tiedemann, who seems to be their best remaining option. And then you get into sort of question mark prospects, or at least bigger question mark prospects that aren't consensus top guys. So where does that leave you in terms of improving this roster if a lot of pieces are off the board through free agency and you're limited when it comes to the trade market? It feels like that is a team, and this has been the part that I think a lot of people have had a tough time processing this year, is that's a team that kind of has to wait and see what other teams do, whether it was with their free agent muscle or with the way that they decide to line up dance partner-wise with some of these, you know, secondary tier prospects, in order for you to make a team that right now was supposed to be an all-in-ish type competitive cycle. And I don't mean all in terms of you were going to move all of your prospects, but yeah, it was supposed to feel a little bit more desperate, I think, than this offseason has felt.
Well, I think there's probably more of a catching market than kind of the way you described it there. Like, you can look at the Sean Murphy trade talks that are going on right now and some of the teams that are in on him, like you're hearing about. It could be Padres, could be Arizona, Cleveland, could be Minnesota, you know, like the Giants. I mean, there's just so many teams that are in on him right now. And then you even, you know, sort of look at what's going to happen with Christian Vasquez, who's probably the best remaining catcher on the free agent market, unless I'm overlooking somebody. So there's going to be losers in those, in that bidding. And there's going to be teams that are saying, man, like, we'd really like to upgrade behind the plate, and they're going to look to the Blue Jays as having three guys who are capable and have actually like a ton of upside at that position. Like, it's such a rare position to be in. Where
you think it's three guys though?
The catchers.
Like, do you still think it's the three guys, or do you think that it's just Danny?
It would depend, right? Because those, like, different guys are going to appeal to different teams. Like, if you're like, take the Guardians for example, they're probably not trading for Danny Jansen because he's only got a couple years left before free agency. Like, they are constantly looking to layer in young pre-arb talent. So to them, like, a Moreno would make a lot more sense, or even a Kirk would make a lot more sense. But like, if you're, I don't know, the Twins or the Padres, and you're looking for more of like an established, we know what you are, win now piece, and we can spend some more money, well, Jansen might make more sense for them. So it really kind of depends on who you're discussing with.
Here's another bigger one. Do you think that the Jays have second thoughts about the Teoscar Hernandez trade as it stands today?
I don't think so. I think Teoscar was always going to move this offseason, honestly, in one way or another. Mm-hmm. They might have second thoughts about the timing of it. Like, maybe they would have kind of held on to that Mariners offer for longer, because I think it still would have been there today, like, if they hadn't pulled the trigger when they did. I think there was some benefit to pulling the trigger at that point, because it kind of signaled to outfielders they were talking to on the free agent market, like, where the path to playing time was going to be. But obviously they didn't end up signing Brandon Nimmo, right? So I think, like, it may be the timing, but I do think that one way or another, Teoscar Hernandez was always going to be moved this offseason, just as the Blue Jays try to diversify their offense, as they kind of move off of a player that, I mean, they've been working with for a long time and maybe was going to benefit from going somewhere else, free up the money, which obviously is going to help them a little bit. And then also the fact that Teoscar entering like his last year prior to free agency, the Blue Jays want to cash in a bit on that value before he walks for nothing.
See, it feels like a misread from the outside, because I have a hard time believing you couldn't get that, what you said, from the Mariners now. If you call the Mariners tomorrow and you still have Teoscar Hernandez and you say, yeah, we'd like to trade him for the reliever you didn't use in the postseason, I feel as though they're still saying yes to that. So your floor as a trade, all those options, the reasons that you traded Teoscar Hernandez are the ones that you outlined about signifying to free agents and freeing up the money beforehand. And I don't know why you couldn't have done that privately with a free agent, telling them, hey, there's going to be subsequent moves that will open up playing time for you. We will still guarantee you, you will be our opening day center fielder or whatever to Brandon Nimmo. That there's not going to be a confusion of, no, you're going to be a part-time. No. Brandon Nimmo was signing, what did he end up signing for? $170 million? It was wild.
62 over 8.
Yeah, it was too much money for the Blue Jays to be in on, and it's too much that I would have felt comfortable for a guy like Nimmo, but it's hard to believe that anybody that they would have been pursuing that was even in that category of free agent, that they would have needed to clear the decks in the outfield to convince them to come play here. It was about the money and the timing. And now it does feel like maybe you could have gotten more for Teoscar Hernandez given some of these contracts, given the nature of what has happened in free agency, and that we're left here going, boy, Brantley is a name. How Brantley is, you know, a part-time player who is almost 40. And I love Michael Brantley, great clubhouse guy, great bat when he's healthy, someone that I kind of sneakily would not mind if the Blue Jays ended up getting him. But to compare him to Teo, yeah, I think that Teoscar Hernandez at this point of his career is a much more impactful player, especially given the health.
I think it's fair to criticize the timing, and I think you're right that the Mariners still would have been in position to make that move today versus, what was that, like a month and a half ago the Blue Jays made that move?
Right.
Because you look at it, the Mariners really haven't done anything in free agency, right? So I don't know. If you don't make that move, do the Mariners go out and get Nimmo? I don't think so. Certainly not Judge. I mean, I don't know. Mitch Haniger, maybe, right? Like, maybe they would have brought him back.
I don't know. That was pretty good money for Mitch Haniger, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, that deal is probably still there today. But, I mean, look, if any of us could have foreseen how this free agent market was going to play out, we wouldn't be talking on the radio right now, right? Like, I certainly didn't see some of these deals coming. I don't know if you did. Like, the tough part for the Blue Jays, I think, in free agency has just been, like, A, how competitive the market has been in recent years. Like, when the Blue Jays were making deals with Gosman, making deals with Springer, they weren't competing with this number of suitors. Like, they didn't have as many owners who were splashing around money like this. Like, that was still sort of pre-CBA times when all these owners are saying, oh, well, we got to tighten our belts. You know, baseball's really not that profitable of a business.
Yeah, it turns out it's actually fine. It turns out business is fine. You're doling out $300 million for multiple guys. This is okay. Baseball's doing just okay.
So the Blue Jays weren't really competing with that. And then you look at this market, like, man, ask Chaim Bloom about this, dude. Like, this has not been a good market for the, like, disciplined, pragmatic front office. Like, the crew that sticks to its valuations and is very rational and measured and, all, let's manage the long term and let's not get too crazy. And here comes, like, Steve Cohen, you know, Kool-Aid manning his way into the market, throwing money all over the place, right? Like, it just hasn't been a good market for front offices like that. I don't know if any of us saw that happening or could have foreseen that, but, you know, the hallmark of a good front office is, okay, you read and you react and you adjust and you find a way to operate with the market realities, even if they are rather illogical.
But what do you think is the reason behind so many of us not seeing this happen? Like, Jeff Passan came on with me right after the Teo trade, and we were talking about the Nimmo deal, and he had mentioned that before the offseason, he didn't see Nimmo getting $100 million. That the idea of that was far-fetched for him. And then he ends up signing for $168 million. And if we're going to criticize the front office, which, again, I think is fair, we have to wonder, what is the reasoning for this misread, right? Why was it all the teams that got it wrong? Is it just some of the teams that ended up getting it wrong? Or is it that Blue Jays, they knew it, they just have been inflexible and they were not willing to budge off of that position that you talked about and not willing to adapt to the real market realities, which is it was going to cost them more this year?
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up, like your conversation with Passan. I remember maybe like halfway through the season or something, I was sitting down with Shai and Ben in the Jays press box, and we were kind of looking ahead at outfielders who were going to be available for the offseason. And I remember saying, like, oh man, like Nimmo is the guy. Like, he just answers so many questions for them. And then Ben, who knows this stuff better than anybody, was like, yeah, but he's going to cost like $70 or $80 million in free agency, Arden. I mean, you can't spend that kind of money on Brandon Nimmo. And we all laughed. And we were like, yeah, of course they wouldn't do that. How about twice that?
Yeah.
I just don't think that anybody foresaw this coming, or at least, you know, those of us who aren't, like, you know, within MLB front offices, or, you know, I don't know, Steve Cohen's hedge fund manager, right? But if you look at it, it's what? Maybe five or six, like, teams that are really aggressively pushing the tax and really spending into those upper limits. And there's a bunch of other teams kind of sitting around saying, well, we've got really strict valuations on these players and we don't really want to exceed them because we're trying to do the best thing for
our
budget.
That's so nerdy to me. I hate it. I hate that.
I know. But you've kind of got two worlds in the MLB right now, right? Like, you've got Steve Cohen's kind of in, like, a world upon himself.
Sure.
And then you've kind of got, like, your Yankee-level spending below that. But, I mean, you got Cruz. Like, look, like, what have the Dodgers done this offseason, really, right? Look at, you know, the Astros, another pretty prudent, like, disciplined front office. I mean, they haven't been splashing around crazy money. Justin Verlander didn't come back to the Astros. You know, the Giants, the Giants have tried to spend some money, but, like, you're seeing a lot of teams kind of on the sidelines, on the outside looking in, while, you know, the Mets and the Yankees, the Phillies are kind of spending all their dough. But that money might run out, and there might be a kind of second wave to this market where all those teams that are aggressively pushing into the tax are done. And so, yeah, we're happy with our rosters, or, like, if you're the Mets, at a certain point, you can only guarantee so many contracts. And then at that point, there might be a secondary market where there is actually some value to be had, where there are actually some guys who maybe don't, like, reach that upper echelon and maybe don't get that crazy Bogarts money or the crazy Trey Turner money, because all the teams that were looking to spend like that are done.
One last one. So I read the quote from Shapiro. I think it was in Shai's most recent piece. That was, quote, the outfield will not be uniform all the way around, whether it be heights and angles. That creates some interesting outcomes on balls in play, end quote. So, yeah, we knew the outfield was going to be different, and especially given where the bullpen is going to be. Is there anything more to that that you know about this outfield? And do you feel like that actually might impact the way that the Jays are going to design this group when it comes to their defense, that it's going to become a more important dynamic for, a team that has geared way, way, way more towards offensive outfielders in the past?
So the Blue Jays have modeled this out, like how the new dimensions are going to impact balls in play. Like, you know, the assistant GMs, like Joe Sheehan and Mike Morrow have been working on this, and their analytics and R&D folks have worked on this for a long time. They believe they've designed it via, you know, a series of different kind of juts and heights and angles to play relatively neutral, not to favor hitters or favor pitchers dramatically. But look, all that stuff looks great in a model, but you just don't know the difference until the ball is in play, until there's actually, you know, Aaron Judge is hitting like a 115-mile screamer off the top of that wall, and Kevin Kiermaier is scrambling around trying to collect it. Without even uniformity in the actual baseball itself, which we did not see this season, as MLB kind of cycled through these various different types of baseballs, some that flew better, some that were deader, some that hitters would tell you were, quote, squishy. You just don't know how the ball is going to behave when it's in play. But what we can expect is that the outfield will not be uniform all the way around. There will be different angles to it, and there will be some interesting balls in play over the first month as everybody learns how these new dimensions are going to play. From a pure spectator's perspective, I love it because it's interesting and it's different, and it's not that kind of cookie cutter, milk toast, sky dome outfield that you had. It's going to be different.
Yeah, I'm excited to look forward to sitting somewhere else in the ballpark other than just being my snobbish self that will only sit behind and between first and third because, everywhere else kind of stinks to sit in there. So, maybe it'll be better now. Anyway, Arden Dwelling, always fun, buddy. Thanks for making time. I'm sorry we ran out of time.
We didn't even touch.
Yeah,
UFC,
no, let's just do it. Like, sorry, the boys are getting.
Is this not the most undercovered story in sports right now, JD? Like, is this not the a gambling scandal in a major North American sport?
Okay,
is that not insane?
Yeah, we have to do it. Okay, so it took too much time talking off the top. I didn't know my one buddy on the show, Pete, went viral for a curling clip, and it threw off the timing of the entire show. So,
damn it, Pete.
Yeah, I know, Pete. It's right. I don't know. I don't know how it makes its way back to Ontario from a betting standpoint for a while. They have this scandal that's going on, and I don't know if you caught Dana White in the post-match. Like, his media conference afterwards, you can never really read into anything Dana says with a ton of credibility because, he proved to, over the week, blast his most credible journalist in the sport, and then during a match-fixing scandal, talked about guys going to federal prison and that the UFC can't do anything and that he doesn't know anything about the investigation and kind of was, like, bullying the person who was asking the question about it, which is a huge story for his sport. Like, didn't want to acknowledge whatsoever that this is out there. Just wanted to talk about Patty in a decision where it was so bad that people thought it may have been rigged. That people are starting to do videos of showing Dana White's face reacting to the decision. This is as bad as I can remember it being for the sport since I was a little kid trying to convince, you know, my dad to let me buy the DVDs at a Blockbuster and him saying it's fake and me going, oh, okay, well, if my dad says it's fake, it's fake. We're getting back into that territory right now with this sport. We're getting back into that territory with the UFC. It's scary for people who love it, like myself and like you.
Well, you're right. This entire situation is a massive negative, like, for the UFC as a brand, right? Because these are atrocious headlines to have going around. If anything, like, it's amazing it has been more of a story than it has been, and I guess that's to their benefit. But the fact that a regulator provincially, a province of, 15 million people in Ontario has stopped taking bets on your product due to integrity concerns, if this is happening in the NHL or the NBA, I mean, and the equivalent of what has happened, and we don't actually know the facts of it yet. Like, James Krause who's the coach of Derek Minner, the coach of several UFC fighters, is under investigation. I mean, he is not currently, like, his fight.
It's going to be a quick investigation, buddy. It's going to get wrapped up pretty quick. He incriminated himself publicly on the biggest show on the planet for his sport. But yeah, no, it's
well, he wasn't trying to hide it at all, dude.
I know.
He had a Discord and a podcast where he was giving out gambling. Like, this is as if Sheldon Keefe had a Discord and a podcast where he was like, yeah, you're going to want to hammer that under on the Oilers on Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Like, it's, that is the equivalent of this. This was an active coach in UFC, but that, like, none of this was hidden. It was all so brazen, which is also, to your point, like, kind of what we love about the UFC is that it is the Wild West, and that you do get, like, Dana White coming in that, out here, like, guns a-blazing, like, that it is anarchy, that things like this do happen. But, I mean, if you want to have gambling on your product, I mean, you absolutely have to have integrity. You absolutely have to have guardrails about who can and cannot wager and who can and cannot participate. It's just so difficult with UFC because it's not organized like with teams and with organizations. These are independent contractors, these fighters. So how does the UFC actually control contractors? It's not the same thing as if somebody is employed, a direct employee of a team. It's a completely different scenario and it's completely unprecedented. But just 2 months ago, you would have a coach openly talking about betting on fights. It's just, it's unbelievable. But I do think that it'll come back to Ontario. I just think
so
that
do
you
I.
Need...
I just don't know how long it is. This is where, dude, I don't think the province is blameless. I think that there is an axe to grind against that sport. You saw how long it took to get it, you know, legalized here, right? To get events here. And to me, this was a super reactionary thing that they did. Like, you could, there were other ways of doing it, right? You saw New Jersey said, hey, we're not taking bets on Krause fights. This wasn't pervasive throughout the entire UFC. They clearly needed to make changes. I brought it up after the TJ Dillashaw fight, how if there are egregious injuries like that, the bettors just need to be able to know that you can't have guys showing up with dislocated shoulders to fights and being completely out of it 1 second in and not having the lines move. But you also clearly can't have people that are making huge bets around the camps off of those injuries because you don't have the transparency. To me, it's one thing kind of fixes the other, which is just more transparency into injuries from camps. Are guys hurt? Are guys banged up? And it's a problem for the sport because people say, well, that's what you're going to attack. And you go, well, I'm sorry, but that's just the modern realities of the sport. There are some other things too, which is, yeah, Krause was betting on it, but I do agree with Dana in this regard, is there isn't enough money in it to justify the risk versus the reward. If you're like a tertiary family member, to steal a word from Stewie, and you go and you place a $100 bet on your, you know, brother-in-law or whatever, that enough money that it doesn't end up getting caught, was that worth it? Was that worth potentially risking somebody's career? I don't know. It just feels really dumb. And even to compare it to the NFL, which is just massive, 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 they had a player that gambled on a game. Did we stop losing the ability to bet on the NFL a year later? Like, no. And because they have better safeguards, but also because it's more credible. And yeah, I hope the UFC comes back, because the longer this goes, the more damaging it is. But there's a lot of self-inflicted stuff here with their judges, with Dana White's, the way he comports himself, the fact that they turned Paddy Pimblett into the most exciting guy in the UFC to a figure that people don't like in the course of a weekend was astonishing. So yeah, there's just, it's a lot of negative momentum that I think they're going to have to fight for a bit longer than, again, someone like me would hope.
I love the, like, just thinking about parallels between the UFC and, like, you know, North American sports, like the major ones. Like, you mentioned the Paddy Pimblett situation with Ariel Helwani. He's sitting there with, you know, Dana White, and they're both dumping on Ariel. Ariel's great, by the way. Obviously, we both love him. But, like, that would be the equivalent of, like, Gary Bettman and Mitch Marner releasing a podcast where they just heap every loading amount of crap on J.D. Bunkus.
Oh, you called me the air. I thought you were going to say Elliot, and I went, that's where that was going.
Yeah,
if it was on me, it would be truly the greatest thing that ever happened in my career. I would be so thrilled that that happened, the acknowledgement of those two on one spot. I would have to feign like I was offended and hurt, but deep down, I would want everyone to know that I there would be nothing greater for my, yeah, for my life. That's it. That's my top life goal, is to have that happen now.
Fair enough. Elliot's a better parallel. I just used you because I'm here talking to you.
But yeah, like, I think so.
It's the point is that it would never happen in another sport, right? And that is part of why we love MMA. But like, look, as it continues to kind of become more and more above board and more mainstream, like, you have to have guardrails. You have to have rules and regulations. To your point about camps and releasing injury information, like, it's one thing to do that when you are, like, an affiliated organization like the Edmonton Oilers, like the Toronto Maple Leafs, as part of the NHL. It's another with all these disparate camps that are all operating independently on their own. There's no organization of them. Like, fighters are independent contractors. They're not employees of the UFC. And I think the UFC likes it that way.
You don't have to think. They love it. They love it. Right? It's their number one priority.
It lets them get away with all kinds of shady stuff, and they pay, you know, give fewer benefits, and there's no pensions, like, there's no organization, there's no unionization. Any of that is totally to their benefit. But in this specific situation, gambling, betting, injuries, TJ Dillashaw entering a fight on with one arm, that he has no chance of beating Aljamain Sterling with one arm, and he knows that, and people in his camp know that. That's different. And that's, I don't know how you square that circle. Like, I don't know how you solve that problem when fighters are not employees, and when you don't have that kind of control over them to institute some of this stuff. Like, right now, the UFC has essentially said, look, if you bet on fights, we will cut you. And that is the most that they can do. I think that for, you know, the AGCO and for regulators, like, they're going to need really clear, written regulations and guidelines and guardrails about this kind of stuff. I don't know how you take it from putting that in writing to actually enforcing when you don't actually employ the athletes, when they're just an independent contractor.
That's it. That's why I I'm dubious about the timeline for it returning to Ontario. I just don't know what that path looks like right now, and I've yet to hear from someone who I've asked anything that gives me any hope that we're going to be able to place a wager on a UFC fight for quite some time. Arden, thanks for coming on today, buddy. I do appreciate it. I'm sorry I didn't get into UFC earlier. I should have done UFC with you first, you know, gotten you really hyped up on this, and then maybe you would have been a little, you accidentally let something slip about the Blue Jays. That would have been, I was close. I screwed that up. Next time I'll be better. See you, buddy.
All right, take it easy, bud.
See you, dude. Arden's Welling. At the Letters, it's excellent. And won an award. This was nominated for one. Also, the Kiermaier deal, I should say, is not, there's no announcement that there's 3 years. Once again, I have been failed by the group. Thank you, group. Rushing to Google, once again, hurts my feelings. Anyway, quick break, let's come back, and let's talk about something you can bet on.
Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
All right, it's time for action. Brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings app to get in on the action. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. So the Dolphins broke the Cowards parlay at the very end of the night, and it was the worst kind of way because you knew that any smart coach was going to kick a field goal and avoid the backdoor cover rather than maybe the garbage time touchdown for the backdoor cover, and I just sat there just so sour about it. My brother and I texting. And I went to bed, and I went, I'm doing BT in the morning. I should go to bed. This game is done. Herbert's carving them up. And I just couldn't look away. Herbert was too brilliant. I had the bet open. I'm done betting on Tua Tagovailoa, okay? 3-17 to start that game. You suck, Tua. yeah, just flat out, you stink. If there's not a wide-open guy in the middle of the field, then what are you going to do about it? Nothing is what we learned on Sunday. Tough weekend for, what's the guy's name? Sam Achoa? There's a media guy that said that Justin Herbert is a Twitter quarterback. You got, that's it. What'd I say? Not close. Oh, okay. So I was close. That counts. I'm counting that kind of close.
Twitter QB.
Anyway, called Herbert a Twitter QB, said that Tua was better. Yikes. He got pounded online for that, rightfully so. Anyway, for the Monday night games, I'm also out of my fantasy playoffs. It was just a devastating Sunday.
Hall of Fame miserable. That's what you said on Twitter.
Yeah, the worst part was, though, is I got killed by Christian McCaffrey in a game where I expected no points to be scored. And then all of a sudden there were points being scored. And I survived the bet, though.
Yeah.
The Tom Brady just wouldn't stop throwing interceptions. Thank you, Tommy. Thank you, Tom. Yes. Survived. The GOAT.
Survived by 3 points? Was that what it was?
I think it was actually a little bit more than that.
Because what was the over-under, 44.5 for that game?
No, I swung it to 48.5.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, because I wanted it to, yeah, only for me to have it. Anyway, Monday Night Football bets. This is not the night where you tell family, friends, girlfriends that you have to watch football.
Yeah.
You do not. This is not.
The Patriots and Cardinals.
This is not it. Sometimes you have to pull that card in this business. You say, this is my work.
Mm-hmm.
This is
I love playing that card.
Yeah,
it's the best.
My profession.
It's the best.
Just because it looks like I'm on the couch eating Doritos, gambling on football, doesn't mean I'm having fun. This is work.
This is work.
Anyway, tonight is not that night. I hate everything in this game. There is not. I've been looking across the board trying to find something where I go, oh, this is like mildly intriguing, or this is something, and what I don't know what I'm supposed to like here. The only thing that I can kind of get behind is just a DeAndre Hopkins anytime TD. Because it's D-Hop, and it's plus 115. And that's not so bad. A longer shot one that I kind of like, just a little touch, is a Kendrick Bourne touchdown at plus 275. Because there's not going to be any Jacoby Myers in this game.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I do think that there's some value on the New England pass catchers, but in all likelihood, they probably rush them in. But yeah, so to me, it's long shots with Patriots guys or, yeah, safer with Cardinals going to top receivers. You guys have anything that you love from this game?
I have one that I want to play tonight for sure.
What are you playing?
I like Hunter Henry over 30.5 receiving yards. In doing some research for fantasy this past weekend, I saw that the Cardinals allow the most fantasy points to the tight end position. So putting those two things together and with Jacoby Myers out, like you said, I kind of like Hunter Henry receiving over 30.5 and maybe whatever the receptions are too.
I just want to say that I wish that fantasy sites would not include that information next to the guy's name, because to me it's the number one trip up that makes you overthink. You have a stud and you say, I play this guy every week. This guy is good. He's staying in the lineup. And then the little indicator is green or red beside, and they go, you sure? Are you sure? And I go, I'm not sure. And then I wilt under the pressure every single week. It is, there. Nothing has been more damaging to fantasy football players than that. The number one tight end number one tight end defense is like that. That has killed more fantasy careers than anything else. That has killed more fantasy careers than just pure blatant stupidity. Anyway, what do you guys like?
I like, well, this is like really bad odds, but Ramondre Stevenson anytime TV minus 175. The Pats haven't scored a rushing TD since week 7. Yeah.
That sounds like a horrible bet. Like they haven't been scoring?
Oh, no, they're due. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, they're due.
Next. Yeah. Boffo at least has some statistics. He goes, I'm playing this. And then Pete goes, I'm picking the number one favorite to score a touchdown because they're due. All right.
I just want to add
that. The curling tweets for you, TikToks for you. What do
that,
you got?
That Boffo stat that he had at Arizona's terrible against tight ends, that's why I picked Juwan Johnson to score a bunch that week. And he had two touchdowns that game. And Hunter Henry,
he's
I
like
also.
Plus 255 for a TD.
I had him in I had him in my parlay as well. But the one I do like is
he does fit under the big white tight end category that we do like for our props.
We do. I also like Kyler Murray over rushing yards because the Patriots have not been good against mobile quarterbacks. Lamar Jackson ran all over them. Justin Fields ran all over them. Josh Allen had some success against them, and Kyler Murray runs. If there's one thing we know about him, he runs. His prop is currently at 35.5, and the past couple weeks he's been hitting that. So,
all right, let's play those. I like that, and I like the Hunter Henry touchdown. That's where we're going to come in on this. That was Time for Action, brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings app to get in on the action. 19+, Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Also, Zach Brown is coming to the Budweiser stage next summer on July 14th. That's far away, but okay. As a part of their From the Fire tour, don't miss out on your chance to check out this awesome event and secure your tickets by going to Ticketmaster.ca this Friday at 10 a.m. So yeah, you do that right now. Because it does fill up that Zach Brown band. Then gets it done. Anyways, quick break, come back. Greg Jennings. I've never brought this up with Greg, but I will admit that a lot of times when I'm like looking over some of my notes of things I want to talk about with him, I obviously put his name in my doc. Like, hey, things. I do read it in the Madden voice. I do. I read it. I hear it in the Madden voice. I always hear like Greg Jennings, coming on the show today. Tim, right now, do you ever do that? Like when you're parenting, like you're taking care of the kids, or you're out doing errands, and you go like, I put the team on my back though. Like, do you think that in your own head?
I don't.
What? Not one time you've never said to yourself, I'm Greg Jennings, I put the team on my back though.
I mean, in a competitive situation, possibly, yes. But parenting,
doing
in the
anything.
Grocery store. Like,
oh, man. Yeah, I'd be doing it nonstop.
Folding laundry.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, any time that I would have to do even an ounce above what is expected of me, that's exactly what would be running through my head. Put the team on my back. That's all I'd be thinking about. So Brock Purdy did that. Put the team on his back. Jimmy Garoppolo goes down. Who cares? He's better. Mr. Irrelevant. How is this possible? Honestly, how is this happening? What is happening?
To be honest, the 49ers are in a unique situation. And I'm not trying to take anything away from Jimmy Garoppolo because he was having one of his best seasons of his career. But this is an offense that if you have a quarterback that can just run it, get the ball out early, be on time, and make smart decisions without turning the ball over, you're going to be good enough because this team is predicated on being able to run the football and put the ball into the hands of its playmakers. That's how they thrive. And Brock Purdy has been able to do that.
He did make some throws, though. Like, he dimed some out.
Yeah. So, again, for me, I think what's going to show me a little bit more about who he is, which I love everything. I'm all on the Brock Purdy bandwagon. Mm-hmm. I love the underdog story. I love the Mr. Irrelevant. I love it all. But losing Deebo Samuel now changes things up moving forward. Because now you have to kind of push the ball down the field to guys like Brandon Ayuk, who has been a little underused since him coming in as quarterback or QB1. So for me, this is going to really take his game to an even greater level, hopefully, because now you're going to have to start going down the field with your progressions. A lot of his targets, a lot of his throws have been to Christian McCaffrey, Deebo, and the tight end. So for me, I can't really evaluate you until you start pushing the ball down the field and going through actual route progressions. He's been phenomenal, though. Don't get me wrong. He's been great.
Dude, I'm a Seahawks fan. I hate the Niners, deeply hate the Niners. And there's something about this that feels, I don't know, maybe it's just my movie watching heart that fears this so much, but it just seems like there's a little something. There's a little, the Deebo injury, you're right, that does change things. By the way, do you agree? Did you see Jerry Rice? He tweeted, hey, stop running our skill players up the middle. Everybody keeps getting hurt. Do you agree with that with Deebo? Do you agree with that just in general with Kyle Shanahan?
I completely disagree with Jerry on that. Couldn't disagree with him anymore, possibly. When you think about Deebo Samuel, and again, everybody, you can say whatever you want to say. Like, if we just said Deebo Samuel is a wide receiver and split him out wide, put him in the slot, that's not what makes him special. That's not what makes him this electrifying talent that no one else has. What makes him special is the way he's being utilized in that offense. That's no different than Draymond Green in Golden State, in moving him or putting him with a different team. If he's not going to be used that way with the supporting cast around, he not saying he wouldn't be a good player, but he wouldn't be the same. No way. That's Deebo Samuel. So I understand people don't want to see their guys getting hurt, running the ball, being utilized out of position, but Deebo Samuel is not being used out of position. He's being used to maximize his talent.
The Niners look great. The defense is clearly the best in football right now, but I am reminded that Mahomes put up 40 on them. And as much as I want to get excited about the idea of the Niners being a competitor or the Niners being a contender, I cannot. There's just no part of me that can get around the idea of, Mahomes being in a Super Bowl and them you know, having a rematch and Brock Purdy beats him. Although he beat Tom Brady. He was all it took was Tom Brady being 45 years old and having no offense and having a complete meltdown and also getting choked. That was interesting. Somebody grabbed him by the throat. I went, oh, that's a little bit of a tough play. So poor Tom Brady. Anyway, let's talk about the real team, though. The number one exciting team in football. The team that I can't wait to watch every Sunday. The team that maybe Monday this Sunday. The Lions. I love the Lions.
Let's go.
Dude.
Did we not call this, though?
Yes. Yes. We called both of these things. Minnesota, all-time fraud team. I'm not. All their fans should be completely peep. Don't say a peep. Don't say a peep, Vikings fans. We've all been saying this. Your team is fraudulent. There's absolutely no way that you're winning. There's no way. The team is soft. The defense is bad. Yeah, Kirk Cousins isn't consistent. They're a one-man band, and that one man is Justin Jefferson and I guess kind of Dalvin Cook. But, yeah, the Lions, the fake punt, the third. Aiden Hutchinson's just complete breakout. The guy's a superstar. Now they get multiple playmakers. Jared Goff is balling. Why not the Lions, Greg?
Hey, look, I just said it this morning. The Lions are making the playoffs, I believe.
Thanks.
I believe they're going to get in. They are going to get in. I'm not ready to call the Vikings fraudulent because they can. I mean, they're a 10 win team. They're probably the weakest 10 win team that we see in the league, which is only three teams that have 10 wins, but or four. So for me,
you still want to get that Vikings alumni Lions suite, you know? Like, you still want to show up and be celebrated there because, like, yeah, they stink, man. They're
not at all.
Yeah,
I'm not worried about that. But I can't, it's hard. It's just knowing how hard it is to win games. Mm-hmm. I can't say they stink and they have 10 wins.
They do. They stink. Anybody could beat them.
I agree with you there. Yep. I do agree with you there. But if any of these other teams go down, I mean, it's no that anybody can lose on any given Sunday. You know that's how it is.
Mm-hmm. I just don't see it for them. They're the one team in the NFC that, because I can think about a pathway for so many teams where I say this is an open year and the Eagles did their thing again this weekend and now I'm feeling like there is a gap.
Yep.
That the gap continues to grow anyways between them and the rest of the field. But every week, somebody shows up where I say, why couldn't the Lions get hot and go on a run with this offense that scores more than 30 points in half their games? And when the Cowboys put it together, I go, hey, could the Cowboys get this thing done, right? The Niners, those are the teams that I say in the NFC, they could make it. Even the Bucks, after that performance, I still actually, I'm kind of writing the Bucks off too, but yeah, at least I have the belief in Tom. I believe in Tom Brady to some kind of, maybe he gets the magic together, I don't know, right? He's Tom Brady, so I'll give him at least that. The Vikings are the one team in the NFC playoff picture. Actually, sorry, I should also say whoever gets out of the NFC East, if it's Washington or the Giants, they're complete cross-offs for winning for me, too. You saw why with the Giants again. They got one win in their last 6 weeks. It's just not happening for them. But no, I don't see a path where the Vikings win even two playoff games. I really don't see it with their group. But yeah, the Lions, they're just fun. The real question for them is, even if they make the playoffs this year or miss the playoffs this year, do you run it back with Jared Goff?
I think you do.
Yeah, me too.
I think you do, man. Like, I truly believe that Dan Campbell and staff, they have gotten Jared Goff to respond in a way that's a little different than what we saw with Sean McVay and his staff. Like, Jared Goff, I mean, out of his mouth, like, He was never really the guy. There was always question surrounding, is he the long-term answer? Or is it a byproduct of the offense or the boy genius and Sean McVay? Right now, he is no question without doubt the MVP of that team. Like, he has that team following his lead. He's not turning the ball over like he did early in the season. His coaching staff believes in him. He loves the guys around him. It's going to be hard to – don't get me wrong. And I mean, they make the playoffs. They're not going to have it. Well, they do have picks. So, for me, I don't know if you overlook getting a quarterback, but he's definitely going to be your guy next year, in my opinion.
Do you trust Dak Prescott?
God, that's a great question. I trust him because of the defense.
That's not trusting him. That's like you say, hey, do you like JD? And you're like, I like JD's friends. Like, okay. Yeah,
that's... Here's the deal. I don't think Dak Prescott will lose a game for the Dallas Cowboys.
He's been trying.
He can win one. He has tried, but he also bounced back yesterday and had an almost flawless 98-yard game-winning drive. And so I can't overlook that yet. Did he throw two interceptions? Yes, he did. But how he responded was everything. And when you have a good football team, you're going to have some ugly wins. And we saw them put up a 40-burger on the Vikings a few weeks back on the road, and we were like, the Dallas Cowboys are it. And then they host the Texans, an in-state rival. You know there's going to be a competitive edge or competitive nature there just based on, you know, two in-state teams. They want bragging rights. They're going to fight. For them to get that type of win, I think it's huge. I think it will pay dividends for them going into the postseason.
Yeah, I like the Cowboys, and there have been moments where I say they're the number two team in the NFC. But Dak has just had so many trouble spots these last couple of weeks that I do have second thoughts. I've never been a big Dak believer. I do like that he seems a little bit more willing to move his feet. I like the way that his weapons are playing. I thought Noah Brown made an awesome catch in that game that was a little underrated. I really like CeeDee. I think that he's got a good connection with his tight end, and these two running backs are working. At times, the offense looks great. But to me, they're just, again, you have to tell me, are you going to win multiple games in the postseason? Are you going to be able to be consistent enough? And I do think that if they lose, he might cost them. He might throw an ill-timed interception like he's been throwing lately. He might just make a bad read. I think that he's kind of in that same Kirk Cousins tier of quarterback where when he's putting it together, it looks awesome, but then there's just, he doesn't put it together enough to be great.
I wouldn't argue that. I'm with you there. If you put a gun to my head and said, you're riding with him or not, I'm riding with him. Mm.
How big was it for the Bengals to get a win over a team they've historically struggled with? They lost their last five to the Browns. And I know that the Browns are still searching for something and the season's over for them, but yeah, do you put extra stock in the Bengals after getting that win?
I do, because there's sometimes as an athlete, you kind of know this, there's teams that are just bad matchups, and the Bengals are that for the Chiefs, and in years past, that's been the Cleveland Browns for the Bengals. But for them to go, and I get it, Deshaun Watson, second week back, but it doesn't matter. They couldn't run the ball. Like, they actually played really well, the Bengals did. Now, that is a team that, in my opinion, we all thought that they were an anomaly last year. Most. I mean, I don't say all, because if you're a Bengals fan, you probably didn't. But anyone outside of being a Bengals fan, we're like, they're not going to run it back. No way they run it back. No way they even get anywhere close. Well, they are. They are really good. Culture has shifted. It's changed. Joe Burrow was right. This is the standard. And in order to get to where they want to go, they got to win within their division. And that's been one of those teams that they've struggled with. So I do put stock in that.
Yeah. I can't wait for the AFC playoffs. It's so funny because there's all these teams that are like going to jostle for position now at the bottom rung of it. I'm more interested in the Chargers after this last week, less interested in the Dolphins, the Jets. I keep wanting to love the Jets, but now they have lost four of their last six. But either way, this is kind of the fun regular season stuff. What I'm really excited for is those top three teams now. We thought it was two. We thought it was just going to be an automatic rematch between the Chiefs and the Bills, and that's what this was going to come down to this year. And now it just feels like Bengals, Chiefs, Bills, these three teams, whoever doesn't have to play two of them is going to be the lucky one, and the rest of it is going to be a bloodbath. I cannot wait. Greg Jennings, fun as always, buddy. Thanks for making time.
Absolutely.
Cheers, dude. Former Super Bowl and Pro Bowl winning receiver. That was a huge breakout game for Justin Herbert. And I know he's already broken out being a stud, but man, he just put it all together this weekend. And it kind of made me feel like if I had to pick in the AFC, right, who could be the fourth team? It's definitely not the Ravens anymore. They lose Huntley. And also, the Ravens suck. And yeah, I get Greg's perspective of saying teams don't stink. Like, you win 10 games in the NFL, and how can you say you stink? No, they do. That Minnesota team could lose to any team in football, and you would not be shocked by it. You would not go, oh my God, they lost? Other than maybe Houston, would you be shocked if they lost to the Bears?
Not like, shocked.
No, hell no, you wouldn't be.
Surprised, but not shocked.
Do you really think that the Vikings can go to the Super Bowl this year?
No.
I don't know. They have Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, that's correct.
Top player in the league.
He's an amazing player. He had 200 yards in that game, and they still lost. Like, what more can you expect from Justin Jefferson? No, there's no question. That's not disparaging about the Vikings. They have Justin Jefferson. That is their team identity. Their defense, do not trust at all. Don't think that they're tough. Don't think that they win in the trenches. Don't think that they can get stops in their secondary. Slow. Get beat down the field all the time. Can't protect a lead. Don't trust them. And if I'm looking at the AFC, that's a lot of the teams. I don't trust the Dolphins to go deep. I thought maybe they could. To me, it feels like the rest of the NFL these last couple of weeks has figured out the Tua thing, and it's clogged the middle of the field, and their running game isn't as good as you hoped it would be. And the defense, actually, I thought that the Dolphins' defense looked pretty decent. Herbert was just amazing. There was pressure all night long. He just was making throws every single which way. Yeah. The one play he made to Mike Williams where he went to his right and then threw across his body, like barely planted his foot, found Williams down the field for like 40 yards and just, again, dimed it on him, was gorgeous. That's why I'm kind of back in on the Chargers, is because that guy showed so much. Said if that guy plays that way, Justin Herbert plays that way, they can hang around with just about anybody.
Yeah.
And Tua can't do that.
No.
Their formula is Tyreek does his thing. But it's the same thing with the Vikings, where you go, hey, he had two touchdowns. And one was off fumble, but even still, he had two touchdowns. He burnt them up. Tyreek was good. What else do you want from Tyreek? Mm-hmm. What else are you supposed to expect from him? Tua started that game 3-17.
Yeah.
He buried them. He buried them in that game. And that's 2 weeks in a row. And we all love to do the referendums on Tua Tagovailoa. We do. It's the way it goes down. But there's no way that if you're a Dolphins fan, you can be feeling stoked on him. And the real question for them right now is, do you still count the rest of the season as, are we still making a decision on Tua? Because for a while it was, no, he's their quarterback of the future and the Dolphins aren't doing this anymore. They've got their guy, blah, blah, blah. The Tom Brady thing, could you imagine? That's dead. That's done. I don't know. I feel like if he looks the way that he did last night or the way that he did against the Niners for the rest of the season, they get bounced in the first round, I'm not sure that he's their guy next year.
Mm-hmm. How much different do you think this team would look like if they had Brady instead of Tua? Like, do you think it's a stark difference? But
hard to say. Really? Well, here's the thing. Tua is as much a statue as Tom Brady. He ran for 5 yards in that game, and they went, that's the first time he's run in 5 games. And I went, that feels right. He never moves.
Yeah.
So from an athleticism standpoint, it doesn't really matter. They're the same.
I mean, more like decision-making.
Yeah, I would much rather have Tom Brady than Tua.
100%.
And we were talking about Tua as an MVP guy a couple weeks ago, and I never really bought into that. I said that it was always Tyreek, that Tyreek should be in it, because he really does just change. He gets the ball, just completely flies. Such a game changer. It's him and Jefferson that are the top two guys.
Yeah.
Everybody else is, you know, that's not the Jamar Chase. No. You've been hurt this season. You fell out of that mix. It's those two guys. They're the 1A, they're the 1B. They're the only two guys that are the actual, like, MVPs of their teams that carry their teams, carry their offenses. Mm-hmm. I sneakily think that Mike Williams is the MVP of the Chargers offense outside of, obviously, Herbert. Mm-hmm. Everyone loves to talk about Keenan Allen, but just if you need to get one Hail Mary, one big bomb, one big jump ball play in the NFL, he's in the top 3-4 guys?
Yeah.
How many guys would you rather have your life on the line? He's healthy, which is never. he goes up for a jump ball. Mike Williams is in the top tier. He is the man at getting tough balls. even the catch, like Herbert made that beautiful throw, but he went out and got it. And I said, yeah, that's a sick catch. Anyway, I think Amon St. Brown is the most underrated guy that week after week, nobody still talks about him. And I go, he's terrifying. Didn't have the biggest week this one, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Those are the only two identity players that are wide receivers for their teams. And I don't put anybody else in their class right now. Tua just does not look like he is it right now. This is a prove me season for him.
Yeah, it is. Just to add more context to the Vikings defense, they allow 403 yards a game. It's the worst in the NFL. And it's 20 yards worse than anybody else except for the Lions, which I knew their defense was bad, but that's a pretty shocking stat if you're a 10-2 team.
So they've got their 10 wins, right? If the playoffs started tomorrow, I think these teams are better than the Vikings. Eagles, Cowboys, Commanders, Niners, Lions. That's the end of the for sure list.
Mm-hmm.
But if the Bucs played the Vikings.
Did you say Bengals too? You said Bengals?
No, I'm saying that's just the NFC.
Oh, you're just doing the NFC.
This is what I'm saying. They're not making the Super Bowl. So it doesn't, I don't care if you have more wins than the 49ers. I don't care if you have the same amount of wins as the Cowboys.
Right.
I don't care that you have four more wins than the Buccaneers. You have a negative point differential. And you have 10 wins.
Yeah, 10-3 with a -1 net points. That's pretty embarrassing.
No, the Vikings are not it. They're just not it. I'm sorry. You can be mad all you want, Vikings fans, but you know it's the truth. You are not it. Anyway, same for the Giants. Giants and Commanders being both 7-1. Like, oof.
I was wrong about the Giants after I came back from Mexico.
Mm-hmm. You're wearing your Giants colors today, too.
Yep. You know me.
Giants are done. They've won one of their last six games. That's over. The tough one I have, the team I have trouble figuring out what I'm supposed to have the expectations of is the Jets, because they keep looking good and they keep being in these ball games, but then they lose and they keep losing big games.
Did you see Robert Saleh's comments after the game yesterday?
No, what'd he say?
He was saying pretty much, we'll see them again. And the reporter was like, you mean in the playoffs? And Robert Saleh was like, we'll see him again. This team's built right.
Another game schedule?
No, I think he means like in the playoffs.
He's insinuating that they're going to see them.
Well,
he should
be trying to push his team towards the playoffs. But this is what I'm saying is, how many teams can win? How many teams do you feel confident can win after this weekend? And to me, in the NFC, the standings have become very clear. Brock Purdy, I think Brock Purdy played better than Greg Jennings thinks. To me, he made some throws that were awesome in that game.
He looked composed, too.
He does.
He wasn't panicking.
He looks composed. He's ripping at the receivers. It is curious to see how many injuries that they can just sustain the Niners and continue to do this. Their defense is awesome. The end of the game, you saw their one cornerback go down. You said, man, this sucks. If you're a Niners fan, you got to hate that you're just the team where seems like you just pile up injuries after injury with the Niners. They just feel very snake bit that way. But I think it's Eagles, Niners, Cowboys. Those are the three teams. And if another group came out of there, I'd be completely blown away. And if I really had to pick, if you said, JD, who's the fourth team that could come out of the NFC, I would say the Lions because of the offense. I don't think the Lions will do it, but the offense is good enough where I think that they could hang with any team. And then in the NFC, it's just those three teams. But if you had to tell me to go down one tier, I wouldn't pick the Titans. Austin, what's the level of nerves after the Jags beat you? Because we were talking about how it was a lock that they were a playoff team. They've lost three in a row. Three in a row. They were 7-3. They were 7-3.
They were turning the ball over.
All of a sudden, the GM's fired, and you're losing the Jaguars. Get their asses kicked by the Jaguars.
I prefer really not to.
Derrick Henry had like 130 yards at the half. He had two touchdowns. Was in the first quarter. I saw Austin. I saw your tweet. Derrick Henry chugging along. You were so confident. You were loving it. You were feeling good. I saw it. And then what happened? Anyway, the Chargers for me are the other team. And it's funny because I picked against them this week because I said they were soft. They changed my opinion just because Herbert can play in a level that he keeps them in it. Everybody else, no chance. Dolphins can't win. Jets can't win. Jets are going to be fun if they can land a quarterback. If they can figure that out next offseason, Mike White is tough as nails.
Yeah.
Trying to keep playing. The team loves Mike White.
Yeah.
Every report around the Jets is they adore Mike White.
Stark contrast from Zach Wilson.
Why is Zach Wilson not playing?
Probably, I guess, leadership.
Why is he not dressed? Why did Joe Flacco come in?
Oh, I think he lost the room.
Like, so that's what I think.
The team's lost confidence.
Yeah, but why is he not dressed? Like,
but he should dress, right?
Yes, over Joe Flacco.
Like,
Joe Flacco is beyond done. Yeah. He is beyond done. He can't do anything. He's just there to turn the ball over and get hit hard. That's mm-hmm. who Joe Flacco is.
I would just assume that that's why he's not dressing.
We're all assuming that too. I'm just saying he's not in the injury report, is he?
No.
One thing I will say is like the 49ers quarterback situation, like mm-hmm. I could see one of those three quarterbacks, this is like pure speculation, but mm-hmm. one of those three quarterbacks in the 49ers room making their way to New York next season.
You can't do Trey Lance. That makes no sense.
No.
Trey Lance will just come back to the Niners and he'll be there and he'll get to compete at camp and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If Brock Purdy wins... Super Bowl, which I do think is possible.
It is very possible.
No, I'm not even kidding. I believe in Brock Purdy. I like Brock Purdy so much that I kind of was cheering for the Niners yesterday. This is how much I enjoy him, is that I'm doing full blasphemy. He is, yeah. Did you see his dad crying?
Yeah. It mm-hmm. was beautiful, yeah. And they bought the tickets before they knew he was even starting
to see.
He like walked up to the stands and like gave them all hugs.
My dad called me crying when he saw his dad crying.
No, man, Brock Purdy is. How dare Greg Jennings go against Brock Purdy? Honestly, yeah. I'm offended now, retroactively. Give that man his flowers, give that man his due. Brock Purdy is the man. Have you guys seen his nickname?
No.
You remember Nick Foles' nickname?
I don't.
Oh.
Of course, Pete doesn't. All sensitive Pete is the only one who nods and nods his head.
True.
Little baby Pete's like, what? Like, sorry, Pete. Anyway, he's got a Nick Foles nickname.
Yeah.
Just.
He can't say.
Terrible. Can't say.
Can't
but
say
it is
air.
Good.
Can't
yeah.
say it
Yeah, see?
what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, there was a picture posted of Brock Purdy and Kyle Shanahan talking in the locker room after the game. And, like, Purdy's in his locker and everything. Yeah. And then all the replies were just pictures of... Joe Montana and...
I was wondering where you're going with this after the conversation we just had.
Oh, no.
Like, tread lightly. Anyway, no, I love Brock Purdy. I'm all in on Brock Purdy. I want him to be a guy badly. At the expense of my own happiness as a Seahawks fan, I am a big Brock Purdy guy, and I am all the way in on, let's just see Brock Purdy roll. Let's see Brock Purdy do this thing. And stuff the haters.
So
let's
go, Brock Purdy. You have three favorites from each conference, and then a plus one being the Chargers.
What do you mean?
Like from the AFC, it's the Chiefs, the Bills, and the Bengals for you.
Nobody else is coming to the AFC,
and then nobody else is coming out of those three. You said the Chargers were like there, except it's those three.
There's
and then,
three teams in each conference that can get out.
Yeah, and then Eagles, Cowboys, 49ers.
That's it. And I also my other take from this weekend is that the Panthers are the best team in the NFC South.
Well, that whole division's terrible.
Do you know that had the Saints beat them, it would have been a 4-way tie right now?
Don't remind me of that. Please. Don't remind
Why?
Me
what
of
do
that.
You want? Do you really want to watch more Saint games, Jobo?
No, I want to get a better draft pick.
Yeah, exactly.
I want a better
and
draft
guess what?
Pick.
And guess what? That's how I truly felt. You want my true feelings, Seahawks fan-wise?
What?
That loss and all the losses feel the same way, right? Yeah. All I feel is not sad that they lost. I'm sad they didn't lose more games.
Yeah, like this season
they
is
suck.
Just not the same season.
I told
season.
You guys,
just,
who
it
picked
is what
the
it
Panthers?
Is.
Who picked the Panthers?
You did.
Yesterday?
No, I didn't pick. Oh, no, sorry. Yeah, I said the Panthers, but who picked the Seahawks on the
show? I picked the Seahawks.
Yeah, and what did I say?
I
picked the Panthers. And I said that the Panthers were going to win outright. Said the Panthers were going to win outright, and they did. You know why? Because the Seahawks can't get stops. They're a million guys on defense away from being a credible one.
Yeah.
They need an entire defense. They've got one young corner that looks like a stud, and then that's it. That's the team. That's the defense. And I don't want to hear it from any other Seahawk fan about anybody else. Like, it's just not,
So, like, next year in the draft when Seattle's going in, you anticipate it's going to be all defense. That's probably what the route they would go in.
No, I think that with their top pick, if they end up with number two, and if they like one of the quarterbacks, they should be taking one of the quarterbacks.
Hmm.
That should be it. I should give love to Jordan Brooks, too. But they got two guys on defense that I like.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of the defense got to go. Like, they brought back Bruce Irvin.
Yeah.
Yesterday, after his performance, Jalen Hurts moved into, like, the betting favorite to win MVP.
Not into it.
Not into it?
No, it's Patrick Mahomes.
I don't care.
It's Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, Patrick.
His interception total, JD.
Who cares? Do you know why he can throw interceptions? Because he's just playing with his food out there, and he's just like, oh, I'm so bored with the Broncos. Whatever, have it. Let's make a game.
Do you not think that's a problem, though, with this Chiefs team? Isn't that what happened last year in the second half of the AFC Championship against the Bengals? They haven't really remedied that issue. They didn't cover the 9 points. That might be why I'm so angry about it.
Okay, if everybody in this room, you know, life on the line, you taking Jalen Hurts or Patrick Mahomes?
Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
Easily.
Is there anyone like, that would like to raise their hand in defense of Jalen Hurts? Are we really going to give Jalen Hurts that much credit?
I think it's closer than you're making it out to be.
It's closer because, you know why? Because people get attracted to the new thing. The Eagles deserve a ton of respect. So does Hurts. There's no doubt Jalen Hurts deserves a ton of respect for the season that he's putting together. But Patrick Mahomes, like, look at the receivers even that that guy has. Look at the offense that Jalen Hurts has. Every week, like, Juju Smith-Schuster was done. Valdez-Scantling was done. Look at how good everything works around Mahomes. He just makes it work. To me, the nail in the coffin for the debate is that the Niners defense gives up no points to anybody and that they don't concede second half points and that Mahomes put up a 40 burger on them. And you go, yeah, that's the best defense in the NFL by a wide margin, 40. No sweat, no problem. No, man, Mahomes out here throwing underhand passes. He's the most talented guy in the NFL. He's the most valuable player in the NFL. If you remove Mahomes from the Chiefs, what would they be? Don't you think that, like, I'm not even trying to be disrespectful to Jalen Hurts. Don't you feel like you could remove Jalen Hurts and that the Eagles could still be in the NFC, one of the top teams? Like,
absolutely.
You're throwing to Smith. You're throwing to a receiver that got a GM fired because he's so good that when you give him up for nothing, it costs you your job.
I won't say nothing more.
Yeah, exactly. They got
Austin Seethen back there.
I like that job. That's a good
struck
job.
A nerve.
To me, the MVP is Patrick Mahomes, and it would take some kind of a weird collapse for him not to have it. And you're right. The interceptions are too much, but I do trust that he's got a little bit of regular season boredom. If Steph Curry goes into shooting slump for three games, I'm not going to go, are you sure that you want Steph Curry taking a wide open three versus Giannis Antetokounmpo because he got hot in the game? Like, no, that's not the way that's working.
No, and I think you're right that it should be. It's like, it reminds me of the Ryan Brady year, though, right?
Where 12-1, man. No, 12-1 matters, and their point differential is 386 to 248. They are a dominant team, and he deserves respect. Jalen Hurts is absolutely the runner-up for MVP.
Yeah.
It's just that it's Mahomes, and we're doing the thing where it's Karl Malone getting the MVP instead of Michael Jordan. I'm sorry, but that is what it is.
It's like that's kind of, oh, sorry, Joe.
No, I was going to say it's like the same thing in the NHL with McDavid. If McDavid could put up 160 points, people will still put other people in there. McDavid and Mahomes, it's like the same thing.
What does Mahomes have to do? What does Mahomes have to do to win an MVP then?
At this point, it's like throw 60 touchdowns. No,
that's what I'm saying, right? So it's he's so great that it's not good enough for him to just be great. He has to be something above that. Like, his team is 10-3. Their team probably, are they going to score the most points this year? No, they're not. Yeah, they're three. They're right there, neck and neck for the most points. Anyway, I think it's Mahomes. And I don't really, to me, the MVP race is Mahomes 1, Hurts 2, and now it's becoming Burrow 3. Mm-hmm. And then I would probably have Tyreek Hill 4. Yeah. Brock Purdy 5.
Where would you put Justin Jefferson? Brock Purdy 5.
Yeah.
No, how high would you put Jefferson?
Sorry. Should be what?
More worried about the Bills, like with the comment
Bills
there, right?
Weird. Josh Allen's falling over your top five Bills. Now. I don't know what to say, but no, Josh Allen's not top five. Josh Allen's had a bad year by his standards.
In the first 4 weeks, though, I think everyone universally would have said Josh Allen's MVP, right? So there's a concern here?
Yes, of course there is. He turns the ball over in the red zone, and he has spotty starts. He's been very up and down. The beginning of that Bills game, where is he? And then he does some things. He scores his touchdowns, and I don't think the Bills have enough weapons. I think we overstated their group of receivers. Gabe Davis, I love to death, but he drops too many balls. He's just a drop machine, and it's a lot on Diggs. And you just
man, Josh Allen 5 red zone interceptions.
Mm-hmm. Turns the ball over too much. So that's what he did early in his career. Anyway, I don't trust Allen to get an MVP. I still think that if they get into the playoffs, they could. If you told me that, hey, the Bills are still the favorite to win the Super Bowl, I would say that's fine. Like, they're that good. Mm-hmm. So don't get it twisted. I believe in the Bills. I'm saying this is as a regular season MVP award. You can't give it to a quarterback who regressed from where he was at a year ago. That's not how that thing works.
And didn't win the previous year.
Let's take a quick break. Let's come back and let's close the sucker out with the weekend in the World Cup. More crying.
Sportsnet 590, the Fan.
Last week of the World Cup.
Last week. I'm devastated.
I know you are.
I don't know what I'm going to do.
No, this is exactly like March Madness, where it so fun, so fun. And then you get down to the part that you're supposed to care about the most, but you say, oh, but it's almost over and I'm sad.
Yeah.
Well, the actual best part is the round robin.
Yeah.
The finals are whatever.
Well, I mean, I enjoy the finals, but yeah, the round robin is
like... No one's saying you don't enjoy the finals. I'm just saying that the stakes early on are as big as the stakes later.
Yeah. Well, the stakes early on are these crazy upsets. The storylines come out. Same with March Madness, too.
Yeah. So we watched Canada soccer down at Cafe Diplomatico.
We did. It's a good time.
And that's where you should be spending the rest of your time watching the World Cup. They have the street party. Anyway, it's open from 9 to 9. And the owner, Rocco, is the man. The whole bar, the whole staff is absolutely terrific down there. Mm-hmm. This isn't like a paid endorsement for me. This is me just telling you flat out. It's my favorite place to go watch a big soccer game.
Yep.
And I actually think that it is the destination point in the city for a big soccer game. And so, yeah, if you care about these games at all, that's the place to go and watch it. The tent is great. They've got a perfect setup. It's warm in and outside. Great food, great staff, great screens.
Mm-hmm.
You can't beat it. You can't beat it for soccer. So anyway, you're going to go watch any more of these games. You should go down for the semifinals on Tuesday. They still have space for walk-ins. Go and do it. Say hi to Rocco. Go have fun. Go have fun. Go watch soccer. I don't know how I feel about the rest of the field necessarily. Like, I don't know who to root for. Because Argentina was kind of my team. I was rooting for the whole Messi goat angle and seeing greatness get it done. But then those guys were dicks in the Netherlands game. They were beyond it.
My whole family is Dutch, and I was seething.
Oh, yeah.
I was seething. As soon as I saw Paredes kick the ball towards the bench, like I got up. Yeah. I was ready to go. I'm like, get me on the field.
The worst part was after the penalties, when they all ran by and did the basically na 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 boo boo, you lost the penalties. I thought that was like insane classless.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of out on Argentina. Morocco has the Canadian goaltender that I refuse to celebrate. I don't care if you hold a flag. If you don't play for the country, then goodbye. I hate your guts. Like, you could have been in Arnett instead of Borjan, who choked away the tournament.
Yeah. Against Morocco.
Yeah.
Well, I guess they were already out at that point.
Whatever. But, it doesn't matter. Borjan stunk this tournament. I still have love for the qualifying, but Borjan stunk.
Unfortunately, he did.
Anyway,
yes.
I can't root for Morocco and see that Canadian kid be the story of the World Cup. It'll break my soul. I can't have it.
Can we mention that Joe predicted this?
That is true.
Is that the most pertinent information? I like you asked the question, you just did it. No, yeah, Joe predicted Morocco being in the semifinal, which is pretty outrageous.
Very impressive.
Considering, are they the first African nation to get
first
to a semifinal?
First African nation to ever make a semifinal. Ghana was close in 2010, but then the infamous hand of God. Actually, it wasn't the hand of God, it was the Luis Suarez hand of God.
Yeah, different hand of God.
Different hand of God, yeah.
Just not even hand of God, just hand.
Just hand of bad. Hand of bad.
It feels weird cheering for France. They're the front runners.
Yeah.
God, their kits are so nice, though. They're
playing beautiful.
They're so nice. And I truly, truly, truly do love Mbappe.
Mm-hmm.
Watching him play is thrilling. Every time he has the ball, you're just completely captivated watching it.
Yeah, he's Connor McDavid, except soccer.
And I like Giroud.
Yeah.
I do. Handsome guy, scores goals.
Arsenal legend.
Big fan. Big fan of Giroud.
Yeah.
Look at Austin. Sorry. He's like, because he's boy it's Kane kicked it a million
to hear
miles.
You say us.
Yeah, because guess what? The one guy was clutch, and then the other guy, like, okay, Kane, just kick it in the net. A soccer net is actually one of the biggest things on earth. One of the biggest things on earth. It's like, here, LeBron, dunk it in the basket, wide open.
That penalty was all mind games, though. Austin knows this too. Like, Hugo Lloris and Kane are teammates.
They
made him wait so long too, Joe, with the VAR review. It was ridiculous. Yeah. They made him think about it. The French people
The theme of the week is cry. And you're just part of the Portugal guys that cried about the Argentinian ref. I was so
compare me to Portugal. No.
Yeah. Well, you were. You were Pep. You were Pep.
It was Pep.
You are the Pep of our show, except
Bruno
for you're
Fernandez.
Not the vet and you don't have the clout to even bring this up. So anyway, show Pep.
Austin has hair too. Big difference.
Yeah, that's nice. I don't think Pep's trading places though. So
no,
for the
I don't think he is.
He'd beat me up.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
He'd beat any of us up.
Yeah.
He'd beat
Austin,
any of us up.
You almost got run over by like a 12-year-old at the Bills Titans game. So yeah, pretty sure Pep would take you out pretty easily. Anyway, it was a lot of crying this weekend. You know, Setter cried, and now Raptors fans are crying, and people are crying about everything. It's just a big cry weekend. World Cup, yep. Everybody's crying about the refs, Argentinian refs, whatever. Anyway, theme of the weekend is crying. Football fans, Tua fans, whatever. I just don't know. I don't know who my team is. Croatia beat Canada. It's hard for me to get over that. Mm-hmm. Plus the fans did the racist Borjan thing and, they took it to the next level.
Yeah, they did.
They did, and they're the tough team. They're the team I'm supposed to like, and they got the sweet kits, but they did that, and they beat us, and they came back, and they stole our memory, and it was like...
I'm kind of in on Croatia, to be honest, because I have a lot of Croatian friends.
I know. I'm kind of in on Croatia, too.
I play soccer with them, so, I'm in no way Croatian, but when I'm with, I have almost pride when I'm with them because they're so Croatian and very patriotic that I'm like, oh, I kind of want to see them do well, you know?
I think I'm in on Croatia too, is where I'm driving.
The thing I like about
my
most about
Dan
these tournaments
is Croatian. Yeah.
New teams winning the tournament. I want to see a new country win that has never won before.
See, that's actually the part where I go, no. That's you lost me.
You're the hater?
Yeah, I'm a gatekeeper for the World Cup. I don't want new teams to win. I just want the teams to win that have the least impact in terms of making me feel bad about where Canada is as a soccer
there,
nation.
There is
right?
a storyline, though, for every team, a one that you can follow. Argentina, it's Messi.
Yeah, obviously. But I'm out on Argentina. They're dead last. Yeah. They're the dead last team that I want to see win after the poor sportsmanship that they showed against the Netherlands.
Yeah, well,
that
was a whole... Players too.
No, that was a next level of poor sportsmanship.
Yeah.
It just was. So
there was 14 yellow cards in
that
game.
And then even seeing Messi doing it after the game where he's bird-dogging guys and doing the whole...
He's talking to the coach.
Yeah, it's like, man, this is so cringe. You're Messi. You're supposed to be the class.
Yeah. Well, there was 14 yellow cards in that game red.
Can't get behind Argentina now.
No.
Out on Argentina.
I'm just saying, for the people who don't know, there's a storyline here. So Croatia, obviously, small country, 4 million people, never won the World Cup. And this is going to be their last chance with this generation. So the storyline there, Morocco seeing an African team win would be dope. I know you're kind of out on it because of Bono, but...
I know, it's just Bono.
And then France, Mbappe getting 2 World Cups in a row.
I kind of am in on Morocco, though.
I'm going to go with Morocco.
Yeah. I want Morocco. Yeah. I'd be... Morocco-Croatia final.
Morocco or Croatia final would be
peak chaos.
Oh, but also... If there's one thing that the World Cup will step in to make sure and rig so that it doesn't happen, is Morocco-Croatia. That is a nightmare for them.
Yeah.
That is a nightmare for them. There is no way. What there is, whoever the Scott Foster is of soccer is...
Martin Clattenberg.
Call
soccer Scott Foster because there is absolutely no way.
If there's any evidence that they want Messi in the final, just watch the Netherlands-Argentina game.
Yeah.
Like in the first half, Messi swats it with his hand.
Anyway.
And they're like, oh, no guard?
You got to look into this French team more too, JD. They got people putting on curses on other people. They got witch doctors coming in.
If you read about the Paul Pogba situation, you will laugh your head off.
Here's the thing. Every soccer team, you can find, hey, there's some shady bad things attached. Okay? Yeah. We're talking about teams that represent entire nations. And yeah, it's a World Cup. So nations get involved. There's a reason why they wear the no racism bands on every, it's...
You're not wrong.
It's not good all the time. And they're playing in Qatar.
It's actually quite bad.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
it's actually quite bad
a lot of the time. So I don't want to, I'm out on the negative reasons. I think that where I am is let it be one of the teams that beat Canada and let us say we only lost because we lost the winners.
If it's Croatia and Morocco, we can say, hey,
that's the two
finalists.
Two best teams in the tournament, Canada
lost,
and then the number 2 ranked country. We got group of death. That's the only reason. Bring the gang back.
Yeah.
Canada's fine.
I mean, I thought we had one of the hardest groups right off the rip.
Yeah, of course. We got to go. We'll be back tomorrow. Go Canada.